Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about the Guardians of the Galaxy. Of course, no, my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
We got a talking raccoon.
And also with us is Thomas Revor.
The talking raccoon who's the guardian of the Looniverse.
Ah.
And I'll explain more about that later.
I'm Groot. Anyways, let's start off with, as always, this week's solicitations. Let's talk about what comics came out, what comics you'd pick up, etc., etc. Let's start with, let's take a look here. What is this? Cave Woman 20th Anniversary? What is this? The title?
Just from seeing the title, it screams good girl art.
The art's not that good.
Well, that's not what I mean by good girl art. You know, good girl space art, not
yeah. I know what you. I know what you mean, Tom. It's but the art.
Although the look of cave woman on the cover there doesn't exactly say good girl. I would like to point that out.
Okay,
well, none of it ever did.
Let's
Archie
move on.
Archie has Best of Archie and Sonic Archives. I mean, nothing big from them this time around.
All right, Avatar Press. Again, another God is Dead, because, you know, that worked great for the times, right?
Yeah.
The Big Finish production, yeah. More Doctor Who.
And Avengers, and not the Marvel Avengers. This is
Peele.
John Steed and Mrs. Peele, yes.
Patrick McNee.
And Diana Rigg in that tight, tight leather.
do you need a minute, Tom?
The 60s.
We got some Boom Studio with Clive Barker doing a comic book again.
I know a lot of they've got almost as many licenses as IDW. I mean, they've got Adventure Time. They've got Clive Barker's Hellraiser,
Sons
which
of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy.
Okay, let's see here. We have some Dark Horse Comics with Buffy Season 10. Moving on, we have Darth Maul, JT. Well, we already know how his story ends, so no need reading that, right?
Yep. Make sure to pick this stuff up. I mean, Dark Horse is soon going to be no longer publishing Star Wars.
I'll make a point to not pick it up. Let's see. We have DC Comics. Moving on, we have DK Publishing with the history of... Oh, wait, that's not History of Lego. That's something else. That made me sad.
Ooh, Dynamite's got some stuff out that looks interesting.
Dynamite?
Not Dynamite. Dynamite.
Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Spectre, but, I mean, Justice Incorporated. I mean, this is from the old pulp days with the Avenger. A lot of Avengers running around today. New Vampirella, because there was so much wrong with the old one. $6 Million Man, Solar, Man of the Atom.
Steampunk Battlestar Galactica.
I mean, 1880. I'm one of those that remembers Battlestar Galactica 1980.
My God, no. It's a steampunk Cylon on the cover. It's a fracking mistake.
We don't need all that Felger carb.
Okay. We got some
Fantagraphics. I'm glad to see Fantagraphics making a resurgence, but I mean, it's basically reprints now. I mean, Conscience of a Cartoonist, Peanuts Waiting for the Great Pumpkin. I mean, you can't go wrong with Shells.
Ooh, here we go. We have IDW with Airboy Archives.
Oh, that's what I'm going to pick up. Airboy was a great character in both his incarnation and the character that was based on him, which was the initial impetus in the Wildcard series from George R. R. Martin and friends.
We have some Samurai Jack comics from IDW.
Little Nemo and Judge Dredd.
Well, here's something that's interesting that actually happened to me last week. I was talking on a forum and someone tried to describe Usagi Yojimbo, and the best way this person described it was it's like Samurai Jack with a rabbit. And I'm like, I responded and said, that's a very gross simplification.
Especially since Usagi was around
20 years before.
25 yes. years. I mean, he was during the black and white explosion back in the late 80s.
Yes.
Same, about the same time as Turtles.
They're best friends, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the reason that Usagi made his appearances in the Turtles cartoon, because Peter Laird, Kevin Eastman, and Stan Sakai are tight. I mean, not as tight as Stan and the fastest inker in the universe, Sergio Aragonés.
Ah.
Those two sit next to each, have their booths generally next to each other at Comic-Con. I mean, those two are real tight fans, tight friends.
I believe it. Well, Stan Sakai always has a friendly air about him.
Both of them are class acts.
Yeah. No, because I read something about they called him Usagi Yojimbo in the 87 series because they didn't know the proper way to introduce him was
which means they never read the comic book because
the big brawl episodes in the 2003 series, they introduced him as Miyamoto.
It's like Miyamoto Usagi.
And the thing to remember is the reason why his name was pronounced correctly and he had a bigger role in the 03 series is because the producer of that series was
Kevin Eastman.
Yes.
Wait, the 2003 series? That was Peter Laird.
No, because
the quote lost season was completely financed by Laird himself.
Yeah, because he was like, you're going to do this future shit? Screw this. Yeah. I have my own money. I'm making my own season.
And man, it was so much better.
Yes. So, but moving on.
We're still in IDW because, I mean, I've heard it and I've seen it. The Transformers comics, I've said it before, both Robots in Disguise and More Than Meets the Eye are some of the best comics on the market right now. I mean, you can get lost in the characters and the situations and the plots. I mean, it's...
Which is exactly why they're so good, because they actually treat them as characters, not, oh, look, here's a toy. We'll give them, like, base-level character development. And
yeah, not a plot device, Michael Bay. Who cannot leave the movies soon enough.
It's a good thing to show contempt for your audience. Just look at Michael Bay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you've heard me say the Devastator's Balls moment, and apparently there was one in the latest Transformers movie. I mean, it basically throw in an extremely uncomfortable sexual reference just because you and nobody else thinks it's funny.
So are we talking about the Ninja Turtles movie now?
We're talking about most things that Michael Bay does. Although it was, it really became blatant with Transformers 2 and the Devastator's Balls moment.
Well, the
I am directly beneath the enemy scrotum.
The TMNT movie has lots of problems, and we'll cover that at a later episode. Yeah. The biggest problem is it's the Amazing Spider-Man movie, but with the new turtles in it.
And of course, you can't ignore the My Little Ponies: Friendship is Magic spin-off series, Friends Forever. Which, I mean, if you're a fan of ponies, you may like it, you may not. It's fun. It's fun. It's all it's supposed to be.
Yes. Let's see. Here we have there's also the cover by Kevin Eastman, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Annual 2014. You know, his work is very rough, and I always enjoy seeing it, even though it's not always anatomically correct.
Well, I mean,
because you don't care about that with his art.
Yeah, I mean, Eastman's art, especially for turtles. I mean, you know, he tailors it for turtles to look like his original stuff.
Yeah.
I know he can put out much better art, but I mean, this is what people expect from Eastman to put out for Turtles. And he does not disappoint.
And he enjoys doing it. So that's, you know, nothing bad can be said about that. So let's see here. We have some Image Comics here.
And that's enough of that.
Yes. Yeah, we have some Marvel Comics here, and that's enough of that.
Well, I mean, they've got their all new stuff. I mean, because, you know, the Ultimate Universe wasn't good enough, so they had, let's go ahead and bring back all new things of characters which have existed for around that really aren't new. They're just new spins that aren't really new spins. And, you know, did it take over Marvel as well?
No, it's Quesadilla. But,
No, he's not really in charge anymore. He's a creative director. And there's somebody else who's a editor-in-chief over at Marvel now.
Is it Dan Slott? Because I have a feeling there's some slotted stuff going on around there now. Yeah.
Now, there is one thing that they've got listed on here. It must be a reprint or something else, because they've got Spider-Man 2099 number one out. And I know that came out, what, a week or two ago?
No, it's a reprint.
That's a reprint and a Dynamic Forces variant cover.
Yeah, which I've told is good. I mean, it's definitely Peter David's work, but it's not. It's Miguel O'Hara in modern times. We've seen that before, and it was good before. We don't need it again.
Well,
I'm glad to see Miggy back, no matter what.
Well, the thing is, this is they want him back again because they're prepping for this whole Spider-Verse thing, where basically Dan Slott's using this as an opportunity to bring back Spock again.
Spock.
Spider-Ock.
Oh. Okay.
Like I said, it's good to show contempt for your audience. Just ask Michael Bay.
Yeah.
But moving on, we have...
let's see. Art books, yeah, which are always good. Harvey Horrors? Okay, I've got to look at the copy of that, because you say Harvey to me, and I think Casper the Friendly Ghost and Hot Stuff.
Richie
and
Rich.
But this is definitely not that stuff. It looks like it's EC-derived.
It is.
Yeah. Come on, bring back Casper and some of the others.
They tried that. Didn't they try that at, like, Free Comic Book Day a couple of years ago?
I don't know.
Was, like, a new... Yeah, I remember that, the new Richie Rich, and they were trying to make him more Johnny Questish.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, at least under PS Art Books, they do have the Roy Thomas Presents, and it's
Queen
of the Jungle. I consider myself a comic historian. I'm not fit to shine the shoes of Roy Thomas. And that's saying something.
So let's just get this straight for our listeners. Shauna is the Sea Devil. Sheena is the Queen of the Jungle.
Right. And granted, Shauna was based on Sheena, but Sheena was the original.
But it was Shauna that was drawn by Frank Cho, and I don't think...
Well,
Frank
I mean,
Cho
Shauna's
ever...
been around for a while now. I mean, she was originally a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who went to the Savage Land and, you know, went native.
Well, yeah, because the ones Cho did were essentially an... What if? Well, not a what
a Max
if, but it's
comic.
An alternate.
Yes, I know. It was essentially a Max
alternate
comic, but it's still Frank Cho drawing Jungle Babes. So.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean,
let's see. Starlog printing Fangoria. Glad to see that's still around.
We might need to do an episode on all these Jungle Women comics, because I think that's a genre in and of itself.
True. But yeah, the Titan
series.
Yeah, I picked up the first two issues of the 11th and the 10th Doctor series. They're pretty decent, all said and done. It's just, Lord knows how long it takes, because, I mean, Doctor Who comics lately, we know it's got a huge fan base, but they are pretty well infamous for not lasting more than, like, 8 or 10 issues. And
yeah,
they mark it as an ongoing, but, I mean, it's essentially a long-form miniseries half the time.
Well, and we're going to be seeing it change again now with Peter Capaldi becoming the new Doctor officially tomorrow.
Tomorrow night.
Oh, wow. So, let's see here. We have...
let's see. Alter Ego and Back Issue from Tomorrow's T-W-O-M-O-R-R-O.
Oh, yes. I am a big fan of Tomorrow's work.
Yep. Big fan of Alter Ego.
So,
let's... Valiant, you got the Delinquents number one, which sees the team-up of Quantum and Woody with Archer and Armstrong.
Ooh.
Buy it.
Shadow Man.
Ooh.
Good series. Armor. Oh, Armor Hunters. Bloodshot and Harbinger. Ooh, yeah.
Oh, here's a good
Valiant
one.
Was good back in the 90s when everyone was doing a series and just kind of petered out at that point.
But then they became Acclaim Comics.
Yeah.
So here's something interesting. It's this is a manga reprint, but Cheese Sweet Home, Volume 11 from Vertical. If you are a cat lover, you will love this comic.
I'll have to take a look at it.
I like comics about a house cat. I don't know why. It's sort of interesting seeing, like, the perspective of the house cat in the family dynamic. And Cheese Sweet Home is one of these cute little comics like that.
Now, before we get to the last entry on the list, let me go ahead and give a little bit of full disclosure. And that is, I am the grandson of an Escher. My mother was born Escher, and my grandfather came over here from Germany. So, I mean, I love the work of M.C. Escher. He is a family member. Yeah, something like a great-great cousin or something like that. Mm. So when they refer to certain artwork as Escher girls, I take a little bit of umbrage because Maurice Escher had a magnificent sense of perspective of mathematics and anatomy. I think it's a huge insult to call things like the stuff that we see from Grimm Fairy Tales or from Image Escher Girls, because I'm sorry, he was a good artist, unlike some of these others. He was a magnificent artist. So, but that's enough about Xenoscope and their grim fairy tales, you know, with women who shouldn't be able to be anatomically possible or even stand up.
All right, argument for me.
Yeah.
Well, all right, well, we'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we will have the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the GeekCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Come on, man.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at DeCian.com. DASIEN.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. So, do we want to actually start with the 69 team?
Absolutely. I mean, there wouldn't be any of the other stuff.
All right.
I mean, back in the, it was a reprint title they first appeared in back in 69, called Marvel Superheroes, such an original title from Marvel, where they made their first appearance. I believe it was Arnold Drake and Gene Colan, the great Gene Colan.
Yes, it was.
Did the first one. And they've made appearances. Basically, what they were the superhero team of the Marvel future, where... the last survivors of human colonies across the solar system, not the universe, just the solar system, teamed up to combat an evil race. I'm trying to remember. You had...
the Badoon.
The Badoon. And with a name like Badoon, you would think that they were an evil, despicable, alien monkey race with bare bottom, with fat bare bottoms. But no, that's the current odor of the... Los Angeles Clippers. I'm expecting a chair to be thrown after that one, monkey boy. the Badoon were just green-skinned. They actually had one of the more interesting things. It was that they were, they had a literal battle of the sexes and eventually became divergent, where the male Badoon were the warriors and went out conquering, and the females stayed on the planet and were peaceful. I mean, and they had almost nothing to do with each other.
Sounds like the Zentradi.
Yeah. But back
I'm actually
original...
surprised you know about the Zentradi, Tom.
Hey, I've watched Star Blazers.
I got to say the one thing I love about the... original Guardians of the Galaxy is, you know, it came at this time where, you know, it's like pre-Star Wars and kind of post-Star Trek, and it kind of had carried the spirit of both a little bit. I mean, you know, it's in the future, and you got the more sci-fi action with them basically being freedom fighters, but it still kind of had a little bit of Star Trek flavor to it for me. And just the idea, because, I mean, well, as far as Star Trek goes, because, I mean, it was like the United Nations of Space, the team. I mean, you had Martin X, who was from the planet Mercury, and he was basically...
Martin X was from Pluto. He was the crystalline...
He was from Mercury. Nope, oh, wait, that was Nikki I was thinking of.
Nikki with, yeah, the original hot babe.
Literally.
Yeah, the several hundred degree temperature.
Yeah, so Martinix was from Pluto, and he could, like, fire, or he could fire blasts of heat and cold, and he could interface with computers. You had Charlie 23, who is my favorite from the original team, who is engineered, genetically engineered to work on Saturn, so he's basically bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Jupiter?
I keep thinking of Saturn for some reason.
Nope.
And I forget what the planet was, Alpha Centauri 4 or something, but Yondu.
Yep.
Who was the best character in the new movie besides Star-Lord.
I disagree, because I'd have to say it was tied between Rocket and Groot. But yeah, I mean, I love the interpretation of Yondu. And in fact, in the original series, Yondu, a blue-skinned alien from Alpha Centauri 4 with a big old red fin instead of a mohawk, who was the noble savage, you know, the Native American / Indian of this series, who was a master archer who controlled his arrows by whistling. Yeah. Sound familiar, movie watchers?
Yes.
Yeah. And there's, it was just called Major Astro. Initial appearances was Vance Astro.
Who was a astronaut who was put into suspended animation to travel the long distance in conventional rocketry to Alpha Centauri.
And then they passed him because they developed warp technology, basically.
Yep.
And
something that was reused in the Micronauts, but that's another story altogether.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I got to ask about Major Astro, like, okay, he's basically wrapped in tinfoil in this, like, encounter suit to protect him from the rigors of space travel like this. And if it's ever punctured, he'll basically pull, like, what happened with that Nazi in The Last Crusade, where he drank from the wrong cup and he crumbles into dust. Wouldn't that happen? Like, his mouth's open. So, I mean, how does that not happen to him?
Oh, it was quoted on the inside as well.
Oh, okay. I don't think I ever caught that in the comics.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it was an unspoken thing, but yeah. I mean, he was covered head to toe with the suit. And eventually, I mean, they did go through and they removed it and found out that they were wrong. He wasn't going to age. He stopped aging while he was in the suit, so he wasn't going to crumble to dust, and he didn't crumble to the dust.
Yeah, because when you get into the 90s Guardians of the Galaxy series, they actually had it where he could remove the suit, but he had, which was essentially a nature preserve, his quarters on the Captain America 2, which is their starship, was hermetically sealed, so he could, and the atmosphere is tweaked, so it was like 20th century Earth in there, so that's why their explanation why he didn't crumble into dust and such like that. But yeah, I mean, the original, and they didn't actually have an ongoing series originally. It was just like they had a few
adventures.
They had adventures and through a few issues of Marvel superheroes. They were in Marvel 2-in-1, Astonishing Tales and Looking Here.
Yeah, I mean, they made their big re-debut with the whole Korvac series. And I want to say, was it Jim Starlin who wrote that? Another cosmic
Valentino,
threat.
Written and illustrated by Jim Valentino. Oh, wait, that was the 90s series. Never mind. But yeah, they had that big comeback with the Korvac. Yeah, where they had that comeback with the Korvac saga, where they got sucked into the 20th century. And I actually remember it was an issue of Avengers in somewhere around the 200s, I think, where I just remember this cover. I never actually read the comic, but I remember this cover because it's the Avengers, like everyone that's been an Avenger up to that point. There's the Guardians of the Galaxy. There's the Defenders, and there's Henry Peter Gyrick bitching at them all. It's like, look, you know, basically telling them they got to get their team membership down to a manageable number.
Yeah.
And I remember asking a friend of mine, I was like, well, who's that guy in the back? Because that's really where I found the Guardians for the first time, was that Avengers cover. I was asking a friend, I was like, who's that blue guy with the, you know, the mohawk fin thing and all that? And he's telling me, well, this is the Guardians of the Galaxy, which I found the 90s series first. And then years later, I went back and I got the trades a few years ago of some of the original stuff. So... Yeah.
I mentioned the Korvac saga. The writers for that. I mean, let me see the artists first, because Sal Buscema, of course, David Wenzel, and Tom Morgan. But the artists, let's see if any of these names. Oh, I of course forgot George Perez.
How could
boy,
you?
It's only me. But the writers of the Korvac saga, like I said, this was one of the first grand cosmic things that was done. Was basically every hero in the universe teamed up against somebody who could destroy the universe, human from the future that was experimented on by the name of Korvac. Jim Shooter, editor-in-chief, yes. David Michelin.
Of course.
And a name that's going to come up a lot during this talk of Bill Mantlow.
Yes.
So, but yeah, I mean, the original, it was, to me, I love the concept of both, this is how we're going to not only explore, but colonize the solar system. Forget the universe. I mean, this is just colonizing the solar system to the you know, last survivor type thing, which has been done to death. And yeah, it was done to death with the, almost every one of the Guardians was the last survivor of their genetically species. Altered species.
Then you had the last survivor of the 20th century.
Yep. Yondu, Yondu was just cool.
Yeah.
And, of course, the war against the Badoon, and then adding in Starhawk and Nikki later on. Starhawk, who was one of the cosmically aware characters with light blasts. And, boy, did they really retcon him as to who... Starhawk was later on.
He is one who knows.
In the Giver of Light. So does it turn out he's actually Lucifer?
Possibly.
Sorry, there was a little religious humor there.
Yeah, it's just I remember reading like in the 90s series and when I read the original stuff is how he's always, I am one who knows. Don't drink that milk. It's spoiled. I am one who knows. And I think they were trying to, like, out-Spock Spock with Starhawk. Because, you know, he was always the logical one. He knows how things are going to do. It's just, and it just got annoying, I mean, both for readers and characters. Because clearly this guy knows what's going on, but he can't say anything. Because then, you know, the cosmic balance will be in flux or something.
Yes.
See, well, I always figured that he had a portion of Tom Baker's face because he was one who knows.
Who?
No. Who? Knows.
Yes, you did it too. But let's fast forward a little.
Yeah, they brought him back in the 90s for a series, and none of the series really lasted that long. For some reason, the Guardians just never really took off as a major comic by itself. But they really took off with a lot of the supporting cast in some of the maxi series that Marvel had, especially in the modern incarnation.
Yes, well, let's talk about that, but let's first fast forward just a little bit from the original Guardians to a creation by Steve Englehart that he actually penned and actually he said he created in a very Heinleinian style of narrative. And, of course, I'm talking about his creation of Peter Quill, the Star-Lord.
Yeah, very, I mean, he wrote the first issue that Star-Lord, that Peter Quill appeared in, and then left Marvel, so some of his plans. If I remember correctly, he was going to base it off of astrology.
Well, the part of the thing is he also, like I said, he emphasized really hard on the cover, and actually in his story that this was supposed to be like a very Heinleinian-style science fiction story. And
that came out from like when Marvel was doing like the magazine sized black and white comics.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and back in the 70s. For me to explain Heinleinian, I'm talking, of course, in tradition of science fiction writer and science fiction writing god Robert Heinlein. Who is also a very imperfect being, but but Heinlein had a very specific science fiction style. That's really, really hard to copy. And because the way Heinlein establishes his sci-fi is he doesn't necessarily show the in and outs of everyday science fiction life, but at the same time, he'll go into minutia detail about, like, a watch. Well, you'll know everything about this future watch.
Yeah, we can do a whole different thing on Heinlein, because there were two Robert Heinleins. There was the early Heinlein, where we got such things as Space Cadet, as Starship Troopers, as some of his short stories, including my favorite, The Door into Summer. Waldo and Magic Incorporated. I mean, great stuff. And then the later Heinlein, where we had the whole Lazarus Long series, where we had some of the more esoteric stuff like Stranger in a Strange Land and some of the other stuff that he had.
Yes. But like I said, it was just a very bold thing Engelhardt had just splashed across, you know, saying that he was doing a Heinlein-esque science fiction story as a comic.
Yeah.
Because quite frankly, it caught everybody by surprise. And his idea was with Peter Quill was, here is this jerk. This guy is an asshole. This guy is this is the kind of guy that would sell his mother for a dollar. And he would say, well, you haven't met my mother. But the idea is, this is a guy who just is such a jerk but he embarks on this great grand journey, this science fiction epic journey, becomes this great cosmic being. And that was his concept. And, you know, like Tom said, Engelhardt left Marvel right after the first story. And, you know, through some meandering, Peter Quill kind of sort of got there a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they did. I mean, with Star-Lord, it kind of went from this concept that he had to traditional space hero type thing, where he became a hero. He became had his element gun, and there was really nothing to have him stand out. Now, I will say that the first non-Engelhardt issue, if I remember correctly, talk about fortuitous circumstance, was done by the team of Terry Austin as inker, John Byrne as penciler, and Chris Claremont as writer.
Yes, it was.
Long before they did X-Men.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's, like, the one thing about that is they set up the origin of Peter Quill getting into space is one thing that it's one of those, like, was this his destiny all along? Because, I mean, the guy's, you know, a grade-A asshole. He just feels this intense need to get in, go into space. And when he actually...
The point where he sabotages a colleague.
Yeah. And, I mean, the whole thing is, like, what, this alien... I forget what the... basically is, like, what the alien looked like, because it's been so many years since I read that original one, where this alien shows up and he points to this one guy, the colleague that he eventually... It's like, you will be the Star-Lord. And this guy's like basically a jock astronaut. He's kind of a douche, but he seems like a nice enough guy, whereas Peter Quill is a raging asshole. And then, because the whole thing is his birth, he was born under like a galactic alignment of stars or planets, as I recall. And he basically bullshits his way into going off in this grand cosmic quest. Yes. And it's just never mentioned again. Like, all it's literally like by the end of that first adventure, he's had that complete 180. You know, I'm the Star-Lord. He goes off to, I got nothing left for me on Earth. You know, that sort of thing.
Which not always makes me wonder. I mean, why would you have a cop named Star-Lord?
Yeah. I mean, years later when they did the, with the Byrne and Claremont and Austin. Like that story where it's a while later, he's settled into the role of Star-Lord, he's doing good, he meets his dad, and his dad's like a decent enough guy.
Space king of a space empire.
Yep.
Yeah, and then they go off, you know, they fly off to have further adventures, and you never hear from Star-Lord again after that one until he shows up in Marvel's Annihilation event, like the first one.
Yes.
And then he's like, you know, half a cyborg, and he's best friends with Richard Rider, you know, the last Nova, and it builds toward the current series. But I mean, that initial kind of like spacey, new agey sort of origin is like no one really knows about that.
Well, like I said, and like Tom said, the thing is, I'm actually curious, you know, what if Engelhardt did as he intended? Because this whole Heinleinian thing just sounds like, what could this have done to the Marvel cosmetology? Because you want to talk about, you know, the cosmetology of the Marvel universe, you know, the other species, the other races, the space opera, It's a very different space opera than, say, the DC universe. And how much more different would it have been if, you know, when it was still in its, you know, not total infancy, but relative infancy, if Englehart, like, crafted it to this direction he had in mind?
Yeah, I mean, we could have asked the same thing with some of the stuff that Steve Gerber did. I mean, how different was what he did with Howard the Duck, who makes an appearance at the end of the movie, folks? Spoiler. With what others did with Howard.
I got a Howard the Duck story for you for later. But
yeah, I mean, the modern, I mean, what they used, I think that compared to the movie, I mean, I can't say for some of the recent stuff that they've had for Guardians, but I do like some of the stuff that they introduced in from the old characters. Because all of the characters that they had in the Guardians movie, I mean, these are characters that have been secondary characters, and I've been around since the 60s and 70s. I mean, Gamora, Drax, Rocket,
Groot.
Even Groot. Groot, like I said, Groot made his first appearance in the early issues that featured the Hulk, the Monarch from Planet X.
The tree that walks like a man, or something like that.
Yeah. I'm going to leave off the obvious joke, but all of them were, like I said, I mean, I can't say throwaway characters, because Gamora and Drax became major cosmic players in a lot of the stuff, especially stuff featuring Adam Warlock.
Yes.
And Thanos, you know, like the Infinity Stones, the Infinity Gauntlet, a lot of that stuff featured them.
I mean, for years, I thought Drax was basically special, mainly because of his portrayal through the late 80s and well on through the 90s in the Warlock and the Infinity Watch series, where he's literally this cosmic powered. I basically thought he was like a Hulk from outer space who was touched in the head.
Basically, well, let me go ahead and ask you.
Because that's how he's portrayed in the...
Yeah, quick trivia question. Drax was actually the father of another Marvel hero. Who was it?
Oh, God, I actually know this. It was... Okay, let me...
I know who it is, but I'm going to let Ben try.
I give up.
Okay, Neil?
She doesn't have any hair.
Neil's not here.
Oh, JT, sorry. Neil... Well, Neil can answer wherever he wants to, wherever he is. He's listening in. Okay, JT, go ahead and...
Moondrake.
That's right.
Right. Drax was originally a human. Moondragon was his daughter. When the car that they were riding in, along with Drax's wife, Moondragon's mother, was attacked, and by Drax's Thanos. Human form was killed. Moondragon was taken... go ahead.
Oh, is it Mentor, who is Thanos's brother, who is one of the... Was it his father or his brother?
Mentor is Thanos' father. His brother is Eros, a.k.a. Star Fox.
That's it, yeah. So, yeah, Mentor, Thanos' dad, takes and trains Heather in, like, Titanian martial arts and mental...
Actually delivers like her to the... the Priests of Pama?
Yes.
Sisterhood of Pama or something like that. A cosmic entity, and my memory fails me on that one, takes the soul of her father and forms him, gives him a body, an alien body, and great power, whose sole purpose in re-existence is destroying
to kill Thanos.
Yeah. Until he suffers some mental trauma in the 80s, and Drax like Fluffy Kitty, which is he got... turns stupid for whatever reason, because
it's easier to ride.
I guess. And then, because that's honestly, I didn't know about the origin until like years later, and I read about it on like, you know, Wikipedia or something. Like, oh, that's the origin of Drax. I thought he was always special like that before they had the Drax miniseries in and around the time of Conquest, or like Annihilation and Annihilation Conquest, where he's on a prison ship that crash lands in this town in Alaska. And somehow the shock of dying reboots him, and he loses like a couple hundred pounds of mass, and now he's got like the red body tattoos, and he's essentially becomes Marvel's Riddick. is the closest
analogy. So let's talk about the one breakaway star character in the new Guardians.
The furriest member of the galaxy, or Guardians of the Galaxy.
The only character in a Marvel movie to be based off of a Beatles song.
Rocket Raccoon.
Yep. Created by the great Bill Mantlo.
Yeah, so they actually... Bill Mantlo actually is having a rather hard time right now as of this recording. It's
That was 92, right?
He actually is in the hospital still in almost permanent care right now.
Yeah, well, he has been for some time now, since the 90s.
92, because of a hit-and-run accident.
Yeah.
And, whoever the bastard is out there who hit Bill Mantlo, who was riding a bicycle in New York... I hope they have
rollerblading.
Yeah, what's rollerblading? Well, I thought it was bicycling.
Well, no, the point is he had the right of way. But the thing is, you know, Marvel actually did him. You know, they got him an early copy of the movie, showed it to him in his hospital room. You know, they actually, someone high up in Marvel did this. Made sure that the lawyers were okay with it, because most of the times with movie studios, they aren't okay under any circumstance to have early copies of the movie on disc floating around.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I mean, Marvel Studios, with the exception of some of the stuff they do for Jack Kirby and Joe Simon, they've done right, at least in crediting creators.
Yes, they did. And Steve Ditko's name is on the Spider-Man movies.
Well... The Spider-Man movies,
unlike the
together.
Quote-unquote first Marvel movie with Blade, with so much fun the creators of Blade had trying to get recognition for
their creation. Correctly.
Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan, I think.
Yeah. Well, who was doing the direction?
Actually,
I saw
an article, I think it was on Comics Alliance, of them talking about, you know, Bill Mantlo getting to see that screener and just the look of joy he had in his face.
From
like,
what
really
his brother
got...
said, I mean, and giving the thumbs up, I mean, and you know that took a major effort.
The,
there was
giving the thumbs
damage.
Up and having a plush Rocket Raccoon cradled in his arms.
Yeah,
I would love to have a plush Rocket like that, in the red and blue suit. But yeah, no, that was like seriously Marvel. You know, kudos to you for doing that.
Yeah, Marvel Studios, least. Class act.
Yes. Yeah,
but.
And I know it's off track. Let me go ahead and also interject, talking about Class X, even though it's tangentially. I don't know if you saw the story that, what's his name, who played Star-Lord in the movie?
Oh, Chris Pratt. Is this how he stole the costume?
Yeah, he stole the costume that he wore for Star-Lord in the movie. Did you see the story released today?
Yeah.
Where he kept his promise. He said that the reason he stole the costume was to make hospital appearances as Star-Lord for sick. And,
actually, what he said, he stole it with, in the event that this movie does well. I remember seeing when that when that story first broke, he had just stolen it with the intent to use it for good in the event the movie did well. Not, oh, this is my costume, it's mine now, you know, that sort of thing.
And he kept his promise because he went to the hospital and cheered up a lot of sick kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean...
He's a dude.
Yeah. Class act. But back to the Guardians, I mean, yeah, the modern ones, I think a lot of it gets lost. I mean, I know Rocket's got another miniseries coming out, and I'm probably the only one in this group here that has the original miniseries with Rocket, and...
I've never actually... I remember seeing... the ads, like the full page ads in Marvel Comics back when I was a kid, and I was like, Rocket Raccoon. I was like, it's a walking raccoon with laser pistols. I want to read this. I need to read this. And I have yet to find a copy to read.
Every other time they tried this with other animals, it didn't quite work.
Well, unlike, I mean, this wasn't a funny animal comic, you know, like the Amazing Spider Ham.
Don't knock on Spider-Ham. Come on.
JT. Big.
Just saying.
Green bunny.
The Hulk bunny, yes.
No. You know what I was talking about.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Anyways, but yeah, Rocket was a fabulous character. And
from what I'm just looking on the wiki here, yeah, like another popular Marvel character, the Wolverine, originally appeared in Incredible Hulk.
Yep.
Yes.
Which was Mantlo and... I know the artist.
That was back when Wolverine had the whiskers.
Are you talking about the Incredible Hulk artist or the Rocket miniseries artist?
The Incredible Hulk with Wolverine.
With the whiskers.
Because that was, what, 181 and 182, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the whole thing about Rocket, because Rocket, I mean, like I said, made his original debut in Hulk as well, and eventually got his own four-issue miniseries where we find out that he is resident of a, basically a bubble universe, not an alternate universe that's in a bubble, but a section of this universe that's sealed up in a bubble where he is one of the ranger in charge of enforcing the law of a planet, a series of planets inhabited by humanoid types called the Loonies, who lived up to their name. And there were a lot of anthropomorphized animals that some of them, I mean, took care of them. Some of them made toys for the Loonies. And Rocket was, like I said, the law and also the great guardian of the great book from the high race known as the Shrinks. S-H-R-I-N-K-S. And we find out later on that the whole thing is basically it's an insane asylum, that the humans there are all completely off the nut, and they were sealed there for their own care, and the animals were advanced to care for them by alien psychologists.
Well, they were basically emotional recovery tools, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just looking here, the Incredible Hulk 271, written by Mantlo, penciled and inked by Sal Buscema.
Yep.
Yes.
Back with Rocket.
Yeah, no, it's... I remember seeing that, just like I said, I just saw that ad, and it's like, what is it about just an ad, just that one image that sticks with you for years? Because, again, you know, it just takes forever till you find some. But, I mean, when they brought him back in the current series, you know, I was like, how could you not love this guy? It's also, how could you not love Groot?
Yeah, Groot, like I said, I mean, he's the big monster of the week created by Jack Kirby, who could draw monsters like nobody else.
Yes.
Nobody's business, yeah.
And became this, I mean, whoever it was who had the idea of reducing his vocabulary to, I am Groot.
And how they explained it in, like, I think it was like War of Kings or Realm of Kings by Maximus the Mad of the Inhumans, in that, what's that? Oh, I should tune the phase oscillator to 0.53 degrees. I am Groot. Oh yes, adding another capacitor would be a brilliant stroke. Good sir.
it's more than just I am Groot. It's the thing. The whole idea about Groot is he says it with different emotion each time, and he's actually saying a very complex vocabulary. But he's saying it with a very complex vocabulary. But to us, it just sounds like I am Groot in that order. But yeah. You know, it's.
And getting him voiced by the magnificent, I mean, Vin Diesel, there's no one who could have voiced it better than the Iron Giant himself.
Although in the Ultimate Spider, the first appearance of the Guardians in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon series, he was voiced by the late, great Michael Clark Duncan. And if you haven't seen that episode, that's cool. I mean, I know a lot of people aren't a big fan of the Ultimate series, but I say this with all sincerity. You have not pumped your fist like a 10-year-old child until you've heard Papa Bear from Armageddon yell, I am Groot.
I've heard it. I'd rather have diesel in my engine.
Well, that's cool. Although yeah. I did like how they had at the end, they had the little stick Groot, because throughout the episode, he's just this stick with a face in a pot that Rocket's carrying around. And at the end, he pops in like Looney Tunes, where he's, I am Groot, and then Spider-Man, he is Groot.
I will say, at the end of the Guardians movie...
Oh, I was so happy.
When I came out, when they had shown the little dancing Groot, in one of the best scenes, little stick Groot, Groot, and then just freezing when Drax turns around, I whispered to some of the people with me, and I said, how long until that becomes a toy?
It's a toy.
It's a toy.
You have it?
No, they haven't released any information about it yet, but it's been announced that they are going to have, it's from Funko, F-U-N-K-O, who makes a bunch of the other stuff, but yeah, they're going to have Dancing Baby Groot.
Yes.
And I saw a TV commercial for a 1.5 foot tall animatronic Rocket Raccoon toy as well.
Mm. Oh, with the giant gun?
Yeah.
But the... But let's talk about the movie, because I think the movie sort of does the best job of going into the Marvel cosmetology for a movie-going audience, because the Marvel cosmetology is vast.
Cosmetology?
Cosmetology.
So this is a makeup issue?
Well, the... you know what I mean.
The Marvel Universe.
The space opera aspect of it.
I mean, it's been spacey, I mean, ever since Galactus made its first appearance in Fantastic Four.
I know,
where
but it's
it was
just,
the whole cosmic thing, so...
It's massive, but it's massive, because the thing is this. To anyone who just has a cursory understanding of it, they'd be like, okay, there's Skrulls, there's Kree, and there's Shi'ar, okay, that's it. It's like, no, that's just like 3%. There's like a whole bunch of other shit out there.
Yep.
There's the Space Knights, there's the Dire Wraiths... There's
well, as we said, there's the Badoon,
Celestials.
The Celestials, which they kind of touched on in the movie as well.
Yeah. There's the living
Ego,
the living planet. Yeah, Ego, the living planet. There's the personifications of Eternity and Infinity, Lady Death,
Order and Chaos.
Thanos is out there.
And which we'll be seeing a lot more of in the upcoming, I'm sure we'll be seeing it in the upcoming Doctor Strange movie.
Like I said, that's the thing, is this is a vast, vast universe, and this Guardians movie did the best job of introducing it in a very digestible form to a casual movie-going audience. Because
it wasn't a massive data dump.
The best part about it. It was not a massive data dump.
It was a space opera.
And... I love the fact that it starts with a young Peter Quill dealing with the death of his mother and then getting abducted by aliens. And I love the fact that he has this old 80s mixtape of...
Number one on iTunes.
I own the soundtrack. I'm just saying it right now. I got it after I saw the movie.
I can't hear that first song, Come and Get Your Love, without picturing Star-Lord singing into a screaming alien rat.
I didn't have to buy it. I already own all the original stuff, but that's another story.
Let's put it this way. If you go in to see that movie after that first scene with Peter Quill and like the worst day of his life, and then getting contact, and it segues into that glorious opening of Chris Pratt dancing around like that, if you're not sold on this movie in that first 5-10 minutes, go and get your money back. Like, walk right up to the counter, give him your popcorn, give him your soda, hang on to the gobstoppers, and walk right out the door.
Yeah, and like I said, just the way that everything builds together. I mean, you have the Nova Corps, you have a little bit of a prison break with this ridiculous, and I need that guy's leg.
Yeah, I mean, the twisted sense of humor they gave Rocket. I mean,
did you figure out who Nathan Fillion was in that scene?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
How about you, Ben?
No.
Twigs up
the
nose.
He's the alien that Groot went right up both nostrils with.
Ooh. Oh, that's the part where Rocket pretty much says, You're all my bitches.
Yeah.
Yeah. And first of all, Bradley Cooper as Rocket, man. Oh, come on.
When I heard Bradley Cooper was cast as the voice of Rocket, I just went, oh, man.
And everybody else saw
The Hangover. I saw the A-Team. And Bradley Cooper...
Oh, don't knock on A-Team, man. Come on.
It was
what it was, but
yeah.
It wasn't as bad as, like, say, The Hangover 2 and 3, because really that needed to be a trilogy.
Yeah. But, I mean, I just went, why? There are so many other people who could have done it so much better. And then I heard Rocket in the movie. And the commercials really didn't do that much for me. But when he actually got into it, yeah. Yeah.
Well, where he's drunk in the casino. But... Oh, and by the way, spoiler alert, people. Sorry. We should have said that at the top. But yeah, where he gets drunk and he has that little emotional breaking down in the theater and how unhappy he is with his own existence. And, you know, seriously, if you didn't feel for the guy right there, like, come on.
Yeah.
And speaking about feeling for guys, one of the biggest surprises about this movie was the fact that Dave Bautista can act.
Yeah.
Because I
would have
loved his Drax.
Well, you know that the person who, one of the people who auditioned for the role of Drax, got the role of the one follower of Ronan. I'm Star-Lord, man.
Star-Lord?
He auditioned for Drax.
Yes.
Jaimon Hansu.
He said, yeah, I was kind of disappointed about it. And then I saw Dave Bautista's performance, and I said, they did it right.
Yes.
Yeah. And the fact that Drax is like this, like the whole wounded warrior thing, you know, he's just, you know, Drax in the story is just full of this rage. And that whole scene where he gets drunk and you see he gets pissed out of his tree and calls Ronan down on him. And he's just standing with the two knives. Like, he has no hope of being this guy on a good day. And when you're blitzed out of your tree, like, and it's just everything about him. And the best straight man, like, he was so funny in the movie. Like, that just, like, that whole line with him and Starlet, that just went right over your head, didn't it? Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast.
The best part was when he says, you are my friend. And then
knife across the throat. Metaphor.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew some of the others could act.
Yeah. Well, that was how they redid Drax's design from the comics, from having like the red flame body tattoos to having like, I don't know if that's just his natural skin or that's just like the shit ton of scars he's got in pursuit of the people who have killed his family.
Because they did the whole thing of the black blood / makeup with Ronan. And I kind of got the thing that was ritualistic tattoos / scars all over Drax. Because you could see the raised bit in it.
Yeah.
I mean, magnificent.
The thing is, they didn't really need to address it because his character was fleshed out just by his personality so well that you didn't need a flashback.
Yeah.
And another great scene is this movie doesn't really go as you think it's going to go, because you think, okay, they're going to have Gamora and Nebula go on one-on-one with this 10-minute-long fight scene. No, it's she shows up, she says something bad about Gamora, and Drax takes her out with one shot. He says, nobody says that about my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and the fact that's Amy Pond.
Yeah.
For Doctor
with
Who
no
fans,
hair.
Do you know that? And did you hear what James Gunn did, though? Because she willingly shaved her head for her role as Nebula. He went out and got a Hollywood professional wig made, I think, actual hair so it looked like she had her real hair back, even though it hasn't grown back yet. Like, he did that for her commitment in her film. And she actually, like, I think, cried and hugged him when he presented it to her.
I mean, I will say, because I heard something along the lines of commitment. I mean, you know that we're going to CGI in Zoe Saldana like they did with Avatar.
Yeah.
And she said, no, I want the makeup. I want the green skin.
Yes.
I love the makeup work on Gamora, but it's those accents they had around her eyes.
Those eyebrows.
Yeah, there's no eyebrows, but she's got those marks on her eyebrows. It was just really kind of bugging me the whole time I was watching it. But again, Zoe Saldana is so good as Gamora. I want to say Granola for some reason, as Gamora. And I think my favorite bit with her, it wasn't a huge thing, is where Quill introduses her to music. He's trying
on his moves.
Yeah.
Well, not his moves, just that scene where he puts the headphones on her and she's like, what's this? And she's like half got the knife in her out of the scabbard. And then she's just kind of getting into it. And then, yeah, Quill goes in for the kill, such as it was. But that bit at the end where they're playing, where he finally unwraps this present that, because earlier in the film, for those of us that haven't seen it, how Quill gets this birthday present or something from his mom. And for basically 26 years, never opened it, and finally does, and it's Awesome Mix Volume 2.
Yes.
Well, I mean, and, like I had someone tell me, when you got Awesome Mix Volume 1, you know there's going to be a Volume 2 somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, damn right. And that scene where he's playing, I forget what song it was, it's bothering me, but where it's playing and they're about to take off from Xandar, which is like the home of the Nova Empire. And that's the other thing I liked about how they changed the Nova core from being like basically the Green Lanterns of the Marvel Universe to being like this entire kind of empire. You know, it's like they're a galactic republic sort of thing. But where they're taken off from the planet and Quill looks back and has that look with Gamora and she does that little shimmy shake like that. And she's got that smile. And she's like, because what is
and
dancing?
That little slanted miniskirt.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole idea is, well, on my planet, there's this legend called Footloose, where a great hero named Kevin Bacon taught an entire town that dancing is wealth, the greatest thing ever.
That also leads to one of the other greatest lines of, you did Kevin Bacon proud. And also...
Or just where he's dancing at the end.
Yeah, and also, you know, I just have to say, this is probably... another one of my favorite moments was there's a lot, but you know, pretty much every one of these characters steals every scene they're in by themselves, and then when they're in it together, it's even better. You know, I did actually shed a tear when Groot created the wooden ball, wooden basket, and he simply says, "We are Groot."
Well, with the build up from Rocket, Groot, don't do this; you're gonna die, and why would you do this?
Yeah, and I'm not. I didn't cry, but I definitely felt a little misty when he said that. You know, because and even though knowing from the comics that Groot can be regrown from,
knowing that, it's like, are they going to do that? Or do they know that much about the comics? Or are they
I can describe it. I felt the same way watching that. Is have you guys ever seen Homeward Bound: The Incredible Journey?
Yes.
It's exactly like at the end of the movie. Where Sassy and the Michael J. Fox don't have come over the hill, and it's like that 30 seconds where you don't see nothing. Your heart's in your throat, and Shadow finally comes over the hill. Yeah. And you're just like, yes, yes!
Another dog lived. That... Yay.
And another great moment in this movie was, you know, like you said, the
John
scene where...
C. Reilly?
Well, no, but like you said, the scene where you have Peter Quill dancing to distract Ronan the Accuser, and
what are you doing? I'm distracting you, you big idiot.
Yes, but the scene where Peter Quill actually grabs the Infinity Gem and uses its power to basically disintegrate Ronan. I mean, you know, this harkens back to the original origin of Peter Quill as laid out by the creator. Not necessarily exactly the same because you know, the Nova Corps tells Peter Quill, oh, you're half alien, something old, something powerful. We don't know what.
You've never seen this before, yeah.
Yeah.
They left a lot of things in there which are going to come up in the sequel and Avengers 3. I mean, they've got the who is his father? I mean, this old alien thing there. We've got Drax that was dunked in the celestial spinal fluid.
Yes.
We've got, I mean, of course, Thanos and Gamora being his quote-unquote daughter. We've got, and you talk about bringing it lump to my throat, when they had shown the rap sheet of each of the characters had known associates for Rocket, and it had Groot's prison number, but it had Lila, who was his girlfriend in the miniseries. Yeah. I mean, that's going... Yeah.
I still love what... Sorry, you go, Tom.
But, I mean, they fleshed out even the minor characters. You could understand Ronan. I mean, Ronan was a psychotic...
Religious fanatic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even things like John C. Reilly's character, where you think he's going to be a hard ass, you think he's going to... And then he gets some of the best subtler lines. I mean, kind of funny.
No one can be 100%.
I don't think I could trust anyone who's a total dick.
Well, just that scene where Nova Prime, like Glenn Close, I mean, I don't want to say she was wasted, but I wish there was more of Nova
she
Prime.
The parts that she was in, she definitely did great jobs with the scenes she was in. Well,
I loved John C. Reilly's moment where she's like, "Do you trust him?" And just the way he said yes and the look on his face, like he sold that.
Yes.
You know?
And even the recurrence, short by later, "You got my dick message."
Yes.
Yeah. I love the "what a bunch of a-holes," like that guy, and how he kind of came around before he kind of sacrificed himself with,
another great scene is and just to show that superhero movies do care about civilians, you have the scene where Rocket leads the Ravagers in protecting the city from Ronan the Accuser's attacks.
Exactly. JT was saying, I mean, the one Nova Corps member who is leading the charge of the web to stop Ronan's ship, and the friendship that is built where he thinks that the Guardians are these bunch of a-holes. And then you could see in just a short time, there was a friendship forged between him and Rocket. I can't believe I'm taking orders from a hamster. And that wasn't derogatory. That was a friendly little nudge.
And then Rocket was like, "Hold on, I'm coming right." And then all of a sudden he dies, and you can tell Rocket was really. Yeah.
Because that was
friendship
Garth
forged
Saul
in battle.
And John C. Reilly was a Roman Day, who in the comic books is the Nova Corps officer who originally gives Richard Rider his Nova gear and access to the Nova Force.
Yes.
I think one of my favorite characters, and I think a lot of people love him, and I don't think they did any makeup on his teeth, was Michael Rooker as Yondu.
Yeah.
And I love the whole, like, adopted father dynamic that he had with Peter.
He was like,
"I saved you from Earth." It's like, "You kidnapped me, you asshole."
I saved them from eating you, boy.
I love it. He's like a space redneck.
Exactly. Well, it's Michael Rooker. Like, what else are you going to do with the guy? But again, they did the one thing. Like, I knew Yondu was going to be in the movie. I love how they kind of gave him like the cybernetic mohawk thing. I mean, at least they kind of mentioned that, but they had the arrow, and they had that scene in the field where he crawls out of his crashed ship and he just lays waste to every, pardon my French, I'm going to swear, he lays waste to every dumb motherfucker holding a gun on him.
And takes down the ship that's got him trained as well.
Yeah. Exactly.
I just can't help but think, I'm a scene where Yondu is walking down the street whistling a happy tune. There's just this whole stream of bodies behind him.
Just dropping. That was like so good. And I love the, like how at the end, the Quill scams him and gives him like the little troll doll instead
of
the
Infinity
Stone.
But he lets it go because he's like, "Yeah, you're probably right. We shouldn't have this."
That's my boy.
It's more than a couple of things, because there were three things that occurred in that one scene. One was, it's the Yondu realizing it's too powerful for us to have. I'm going to let it go. Two, remember, they even had the thing about him liking the little figures to put onto his console.
Yeah,
he's got all those tchotchkes like that, yeah.
Yes.
And three, as a friend pointed out to me, you realize what Quill did was he trolled Yondu.
Yes!
Oh, what is it? And here's the thing, the redneck Ravager that was like Roman's right hand.
Yeah, you
like
know who that was.
That's James Gunn's brother.
Yeah.
That's Sean Gunn. And he did like the green screen, like stand-in suit for like Rocket. And he did something for Thanos. And I didn't know this, Wesley from Angel and Buffy.
Yeah.
Alexis Denisoff, he was the vizier that
looks
at things
Avengers
from a completely new angle. Because I love that scene where Ronan just like backhands him with the universal weapon and all of a sudden he's looking things 180. Yeah. Ronan, okay, who, raise your hands. Who here has seen the show Pushing Daisies?
Nope, can't say. Nope. I have. I know but I've never seen it.
But
Lee Pace, the guy that played Ronan, is the pie maker in that show.
Ah. And, well, we have to talk about the Collector.
Benicio
Del Toro. Liberace?
Well, I mean, let me go before we talk about the Collector, let me go back into our history of Marvel Comics a little bit. And that is, the Collector is one of the elders of the universe. He is one of the, just like the Game Master and a number of others, he is one of the ancient beings that controlled one of the Infinity Stones. And just as the Game Master plays cosmic games, and he's been a number of Marvel, and each one, he passes the time by collecting things. And this one, he in the movie, he was collecting the last of each race, which is why you could see one of the Dark Elves behind him in one of the scenes. That's why you can see the cocoon that looks an awful lot like Adam Warlock's cocoon.
Yeah. Did you see the pod full of slugs?
Yes.
Yeah. Those that don't know, James Gunn did like the movie Slither, which is a shout out to Night of the Creeps from the 1980s. And that's like one of his little, you know, just odes to his career. I love that because I was like the only one. I went with my brother and his girlfriend, a couple others, and everyone, what the hell is with those slugs? And I was like, Slither! Because I love that movie.
Yeah, let me interject here because there's one thing that I have to say, and that is when I heard James Gunn, I've never heard of James Gunn before, the director of Guardians. And then I looked him up and I saw his history in movies. And I went, oh my God, he's a trauma. And yep. For those who don't know, Troma is, they're not
the
even
house that
B-grade
Toxie
movies.
Built.
Exactly. The Toxic Avenger and so many other bad
Class
movies.
Class of Nukem High, Surf Nazis Must Die, Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead. I'm a fan.
Yeah. Gunn even has a quote saying, you know, if life hands you lemons, make a Troma movie. So, I mean, I'm well aware of the Troma history. And I just went, they've got him to do this? Oh, my God, this is going to suck.
And then he hit it out of the mother loving park.
I mean, I think people thought the same thing when they announced the guy who did Brain Dead was going to do Lord of the Rings, Tom.
Well, no, because, I mean, I've seen some of his other work. I mean, the Frighteners is one of my favorite movies.
Frighteners, yeah. Which one was that, Ben?
Meet the Feebles?
No.
Never seen it. And just a little small tangent. James Gunn also wrote the story for one of my favorite video games of the last couple of years, Lollipop Chainsaw. Just putting it out there.
but let's talk about the Collector, because the Collector is one that is this character who just, you know, he is what his name says. He collects, and the thing is, he was in the comics, he was initially introduced as a villain. Here, he's more of a neutral party, and he was introduced in the end of Thor: The Dark World as the holder of the Aether.
Well, he wasn't really a villain. I mean, he was just, he was one of them. I mean, he wasn't a hero, he wasn't a villain, he just, he was monomaniacal
he's
about
an alien.
Collecting.
He's an alien with too much goddamn money.
And too much time. I mean, like I said, he's been around almost as long as the universe itself, as have the other elders. So, I mean, he's doing something to pass the time, and it's become an obsession.
Yes. And if you look at his collection, you see some previous Marvel and potentially future Marvel hints, movie hints in his collection. Like, you see a Dark Elf here, and you see a couple of other pieces here and there, and a certain duck.
Yep, and which...
And a certain four-legged cosmonaut.
Yes, I was like, is he going to speak? Is he going to speak?
The one complaint I have about this movie, the only complaint, just backtrack to the second volume of Guardians of the Galaxy, folks. One of the best characters, my favorite character outside of Rocket and Groot, was a character known as Cosmo. And in the second volume, the Guardians are basically space Avengers. They're living in a space station called Nowhere, which is a giant severed head from one of the cosmic celestials. The security officer for this place is Cosmo, a cosmonaut dog who has telepathic and telekinetic superpowers, who mind speaks to you with a Russian accent.
Yes,
and
I was like, why
didn't he speak?
Because they were afraid of breaking your suspension of disbelief.
I mean, the initial rumor was that that was who Nathan Fillion was going to be, was the voice of Cosmo.
Well, that and everyone thought he was going to be Richard Rider for the longest time.
Yeah. Nah, too old for Nova.
But
well, it's not like he has to be the young guy, I'm just saying.
But, yeah, this whole movie is just fantastic, and they could have done so many things wrong. They could have totally done a George Lucas and just crammed as much shit as possible on the screen and made it unwatchable.
The classy way they ended it.
Yes.
weren't heroes. They weren't villains. They were out there to do. I mean, yeah, they were going to do the right thing most of the time.
And the thing is, their criminal records are expunged. They get to leave, and it's like, okay, it's not like, okay, now we're Space Avengers. It's like, okay, let's have some fun.
Yeah, yeah. Do we want to do something good? Do we want to do something bad? Oh, you're a leader. You choose it. Okay, how about something a little of both?
Yes.
Yeah, and just the Guardians of the Galaxy will return. And I think one final thing we should speak about here, the Stan Lee cameo. Come on. He was
the dirty old
once
man.
Again, he was once again playing to his strengths. He was the Zendarian Hugh Hefner.
He's done worse, but so to wrap this up, yes, the movie is worth seeing. Yes, the comics are worth backtracking and finding, and it is actually very interesting, like I said, to see a little bit, you know, even in a strange way, a little bit of the initial concept of Peter Quill leaking into the movie with this whole he's something greater than the most cosmic character possible. I don't know if they're really going to go all the way there in the next movie. I doubt it, but it's actually a little bit cool to see that because, you know, Peter Quill as a character has this very, it had this huge, huge concept behind it that I don't know if it was going to be good or bad. It's just, I'm a Heinlein fan. So when someone says I'm going to do something like Heinlein, I'm like, I perk up a little bit. So this is your host, Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
And from 910 Comics and 910CMX.com, I'm Thomas Revor, wanting to see a spinoff with Groot and Rocket, just so I can see those two branch out.
And we're saying good night.
So long.